Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Coming up, Andrew Smith presents Ask a Teacher. We also have Words and Their Stories from Anna Mateo. And we close the show with An American Story. But first,
on a film set in China, a 69-year-old actor is playing the part of a wealthy family leader. In Grandma's Moon, actor Zhu Jian celebrates his birthday with a costly dinner party. And he is about to get a big surprise. One of the workers at the party is his granddaughter. But there is another big surprise. Grandma's Moon is not a movie or even a television show. Instead, it is a series of short videos called a microdrama. Creators shoot them vertically for easy watching on cell phones. Each episode is only minutes long. Most of the people watching Grandma's Moon are middle-aged workers and retired people. Zhu said that these viewers do not go to movie theaters anymore. He added that it is so easy to hold a mobile phone and watch something anytime you want.
Microdramas use storytelling methods like hooks and plot twists to keep millions of viewers watching on their cell phones. And these audiences are very willing to pay for more. The cliffhangers at the end of each episode are critical to the success of microdramas. Cliffhangers keep a viewer interested and wanting to watch more. Audiences must pay for the next episode to find out what happened. Reuters news agency reports that China's microdrama industry is worth $5 billion. Microdramas are shot quickly and with little money. The first few episodes are often free, but to watch the whole microdrama series, audiences may have to pay money to watch additional episodes. Experts say microdramas are successfully competing with China's film industry.
The microdrama leader is the app Kuaishou. The app is responsible for 60% of the top 50 Chinese microdramas last year. That information comes from Endata, a company that studies media. Douyin is owned by internet technology company ByteDance, which is also popular with microdrama fans. Other Chinese social media apps like Xiaohongshu and YouTube competitor Bilibili have announced plans to make more. Microdramas are now spreading to the United States. China discovered this audience first, said Leila Cao, a Chinese producer based in Los Angeles. Hollywood, she says, has not yet.
Microdramas are successful not only for their storytelling methods, but also for their interesting plots. Many popular microdramas For Chinese audiences are stories about revenge or reaching higher social status. Their popularity is happening at a time when making money and changing your status in China is difficult. Youth unemployment is also high. The microdramas often show people who one day are lower class and the next day become upper class, said a 26-year-old screenwriter. Writing under the name Camille Rao, she recently left a low-paid job in the traditional film industry. Now, she writes microdrama stories for American audiences. China's Communist Party has been critical of microdramas. Between late 2022 and early 2023, China's regulatory agency, the National Radio and Television Administration, or NRTA, removed 25,300 microdramas. In June, the Chinese government began requiring some creators to register microdramas with the NRTA. The regulator did not answer Reuters' request for comment. Many Chinese microdrama producers have their eye on Western markets. Microdramas designed for the West are often made by production and acting crews in Los Angeles and shot on location. The stories are in English and often involve wealth, cheating partners, and miracles. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Anna Mateo.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Emmanuel in Zambia about the usage of the words legal and law in English. Dear teacher, please help me understand the correct usage of the words legal and law. In the recent debate, I heard Donald Trump say legal scholar. I thought he was supposed to say law scholar. Which one is the correct usage? Thank you. I'm happy to answer this question, Emmanuel. The word legal is an adjective. That is why we can place it before the noun scholar. In the same way, we can use legal before many other nouns, as in these examples.
Legal system, legal documents, legal protections, and legal opinion.
The word law is a noun. We often use the law to discuss specific laws or to discuss the law in general. Let's look at an example of each. First, here is an example discussing a specific law about voting rules.
The law clearly states that persons under 18 years old are not permitted to vote.
Next, here is an example discussing the law in general.
Over the years, the law has changed to provide equal rights to women.
The noun law can seem like an adjective when we place it before another noun to describe what a person does. For example,
law professor, law school, and law student.
However, the word law and the noun together form what is called a spaced compound noun. That is, we use the two words together to name one thing or person. Police officer is another example of a compound noun. But this returns us to your question. If we can say law professor,
why do we usually say legal scholar instead of law scholar? One reason is that when we state what kind of legal scholar a person is, we can use an adjective and the word law before the word scholar. The following examples show this.
A busy law scholar. A constitutional law scholar.
In these cases, the word law replaces the word legal. But if we are not stating what kind of scholar a person is, then we usually use the two words legal scholar. Note, however, that we can also put an adjective before the words legal scholar, as in international legal scholar. The above examples show that there are no strict rules for using legal scholar instead of law scholar when an adjective is placed before the two words. But keep in mind that we use the expression legal scholar more often than law scholar when there is no adjective before the two words. Discussing the law and legal terms in English might seem difficult, but by reading and listening carefully, you can find the most common and correct ways to discuss this subject. For our readers and listeners, what are your questions about American English? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And please include where you're from in your email, too. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Many English expressions and idioms use parts of the body to describe things unrelated to the body. For example, a green thumb means to be good at growing vegetables, flowers, and other plants. And if something costs an arm and a leg, it is very expensive. Well, today we talk about your shoulder. This part connects your arm to your body. And the shoulder finds its way into many expressions. For starters, let's talk about shoulder as a verb. If you shoulder something, you accept it as your responsibility. You give support, or you take the blame. Here is an example.
Since he was the leader of the project, he shouldered the blame for its failure.
And this is a great place to start. This idea of taking responsibility and giving support leads us to some other shoulder expressions. For example, during difficult times in our lives, it is often necessary to have a shoulder to lean on, or a shoulder to cry on. When we lean on someone's shoulder, we ask for their help. When we cry on someone's shoulder, they are there for support. It is important to have at least one friend who has a good shoulder to cry on. These friends are great because they don't ask questions. They just listen and let us cry. You can also put your head on someone's shoulder. This means you are getting comfort and support from that person. We call people who give us a shoulder to lean on or cry on our support system. There is another way our shoulders give us support. If you are successful in your career, but others have come before you, You can say you are standing on the shoulders of giants. This means you have not succeeded on your own. You have learned from others in the same field who had earlier successes. This expression is often used in science. This is an area where discoveries are often built upon the works of others. Because this expression uses the word giant, we often use it when talking about very well-known people. For example, in the world of science, the giants may include Isaac Newton or Albert Einstein. Now, from our shoulders, let's move up to our heads. Our heads are centered between our shoulders. So it should not be surprising that we have a couple of expressions that use both. If you have a good head on your shoulders, you are thoughtful and smart. You do the right thing, and people can count on you. When you have a good head on your shoulders, you often achieve success in life. This quality, people say, often puts you head and shoulders above the rest. This means you are much better than those in a similar field or competition. Let's hear it used in an example.
You have applied for a job. You have more education and much more experience than the job requires. You also have special skills that make you even more desirable. You feel these factors put you head and shoulders above the other candidates.
Here's another example.
You are preparing to run in a race. You have clocked the fastest time, and you have trained more than all the other runners. That certainly makes you head and shoulders above the rest.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Now, the Learning English Program, American Stories. Today, we hear the 1906 story, Mammon and the Archer, by O. Henry.
Old Anthony Rockwall, who made millions of dollars by making and selling Rockwall soap, stood at the window of his large Fifth Avenue house. He was looking out at his neighbor, G. Van Schulite Suffolk Jones. His neighbor is a proud member of a proud old New York family. He came out of his door and got into a cab. He looked once, quickly as usual, at Anthony Rockwall's house. The look showed that Suffolk Jones was a very important man, while a rich soapmaker was nothing.
"I'll have this house painted red, white, and blue next summer," said the Soap King to himself. "And we'll see how he likes that."
And then Anthony Rockwall turned around and shouted,
"Mike!"
in a loud voice. He never used a bell to call a servant.
"Tell my son," he said when the servant came, "to come to me before he leaves the house."
When young Rockwall entered the room, the old man put down the newspaper he had been reading.
"Richard," said Anthony Rockwall, "what do you pay for the soap that you use?"
Richard had finished college 6 months before, and he had come home to live. He had not yet learned to understand his father. He was always being surprised. He said,
$6 for 12 pieces.
"And your clothes?"
"About $60, usually."
"You are a gentleman," said his father. "I have heard of young men who pay $24 for 12 pieces of soap, and more than $100 for clothes. You have as much money to throw away as anyone else has. But what you do is reasonable. I myself use Rockwall soap because it is the best. When you pay more than 10 cents for a piece of soap, you're paying for a sweet, strong smell and a name. But 50 cents is good for a young man like you. You are a gentleman. People say that if a man is not a gentleman, his son can't be a gentleman. But perhaps his son's son will be a gentleman. But they're wrong. Money does it faster than that. Money has made you a gentleman. It has almost made me a gentleman. I've become very much like the two gentlemen who own the houses on each side of us. My manners are now almost as bad as theirs. But they still can't sleep at night because a soap maker lives in this house. There are some things that money can't do, said the young man rather sadly. Don't say that, said old Anthony. Money is successful every time. I don't know anything you can't buy with it. Tell me something that money can't buy. And I want you to tell me something more. Something is wrong with you. I've seen it for 2 weeks. Tell me. Let me help you. In 24 hours, I could have $11 million here in my hands. Are you sick?
Some people call it a sickness.
Oh, said Anthony. What's her name? Why don't you ask her to marry you? She would be glad to do it. You have money, you're good-looking, and you are a good boy. Your hands are clean. You have no Rockwall soap on them.
I haven't had a chance to ask her, said Richard.
Make a chance, said Anthony. Take her for a walk in the park, or walk home with her from church.
You don't know the life of a rich girl, Father. Every hour and minute of her time is planned. I must have her, or the world is worth nothing to me. And I can't write to say I love her.
I can't do that. Do you tell me, said the old man, that with all my money you can't get an hour or two of a girl's time?
I've waited too long. She's going to Europe the day after tomorrow. She's going to be there 2 years. I'm allowed to see her alone tomorrow evening for a few minutes. She's coming to the city on a train. I'm going to meet her with a cab. Then we'll drive fast to the theater where she must meet her mother and some other people. Do you think she would listen to me then?
No. Or in the theater?
No.
Or after the theater?
No. No, Father, this is one trouble that your money can't help. We can't buy 1 minute of time with money. If we could, rich people would live longer. There is no hope of talking with Miss Lantry before she sails.
Richard, my boy, said old Anthony, I'm glad you're not really sick. You say money won't buy time? Perhaps it won't buy all of time, but I've seen it buy some little pieces.
That evening, his sister, Ellen, came to Anthony to talk about the troubles that lovers have.
He told me all about it, said Brother Anthony. I told him he could have all the money he wanted. Then he began to say that money was no use to him. He said money couldn't help him.
Oh, Anthony, said Ellen, I wish you wouldn't think so much of money. Money is no help for love. Love is all-powerful. If he had only spoken to her earlier, she could never say no to our Richard. But now I fear it is too late. All your gold cannot buy happiness for your son.
At 8 the next evening, Ellen took an old gold ring and gave it to Richard.
Wear it tonight, she said. Your mother gave it to me. She asked me to give it to you when you had found the girl you loved.
Young Rockwall took the ring and tried to put it on his little finger. It was too small. He put it inside his coat in a place where he thought it would be safe. And then he called for his cab. At the station, he met Miss Lantry.
We must not keep my mother and the others waiting, said she.
To Wallach's Theatre, as fast as you can drive, said Richard to the cabby.
They rolled along 42nd Street to Broadway, and from there to 34th Street. Then young Richard quickly ordered the cabby to stop.
"I dropped the ring," he said, getting out. "It was my mother's, and I don't want to lose it. This will only take a minute. I saw where it fell."
In less than a minute, he was again in the cab with the ring. But within that minute, a wagon had stopped in front of the cab. The cabbie tried to pass it on the left, but a cab was there. He tried to pass on the right, but another cab was there. He could not go back. He was caught where he was and could not move in any direction. These sudden stops of movement will happen in the city. Instead of moving along the street in their usual orderly way, all the wagons and cabs will suddenly be mixed together and stopped.
"Why don't you drive further?"
said Miss Lantry.
"We'll be late."
Richard stood up in the cab and looked around. He saw a stream of cabs and wagons and everything else on wheels rolling toward the corner where Broadway, 6th Avenue, and 34th Street meet. They came from all directions, and more were rolling toward them. More and more were caught there. Drivers and cabbies shouted. Everyone on wheels in New York City seemed to be hurrying to this place. "I'm very sorry," said Richard. He sat down again. "We can't move. They won't get this straight for an hour. If I hadn't dropped the ring, we..."
"Let me see the ring," said Miss Lantry. "Since we really can't hurry, I don't care. I didn't want to go to the theater. I don't like the theater."
At 11 that night, someone stopped at the door of Anthony's room.
"Come in," shouted Anthony.
He had been reading and put down his book. It was Ellen.
"They are going to be married, Anthony," she said. "She has promised to marry our Richard. On their way to the theater, their cab was stopped in the street. It was 2 hours before they could move again." "Oh, Brother Anthony, don't ever talk about the power of money again. It was a little ring, a true love ring, that was the cause of our Richard finding his happiness. He dropped it on the street and had to get out and find it, and before they could continue, the cab was caught among the others. He told her of his love there in the cab. Money is nothing, Anthony. True love is everything."
"I'm glad the boy got what he wanted," said old Anthony. "I told him I didn't care how much money..."
"But, Brother Anthony, what could your money do?"
"Sister," said Anthony Rockwell, "I'm reading a book with a good story in it. It's a wild adventure story, but I like it, and I want to find what happens next. I wish you would let me go on reading."
The story should end there. I wish it would. I'm sure you, too, wish it would end there. But we must go on to the truth. The next day, a person with red hands and a blue necktie, whose name was Kelly, came to Anthony Rockwell's house to see Anthony.
"That was good soap we made," said Anthony. "I gave you $5,000 yesterday."
"I paid out $300 more of my own money," said Kelly. "It cost more than I expected. I got the cabs, most of them, for $5, but anything with two horses was $10. I had to pay most to the cops. $50 I paid to two, and the others $20 and $25. But didn't it work beautifully, Mr. Rockwall? They were all on time, and it was 2 hours before anyone could move."
$1,300. "There you are, Kelly," said Anthony, giving him the money. $1,000 for you, and the $300 of your own money that you had to spend. You like money, do you, Kelly?"
"I do," said Kelly.
Anthony stopped Kelly when he was at the door.
"Did you see," asked he, "anywhere on the street yesterday, a little fat boy with no clothes on, carrying arrows?"
Kelly looked surprised.
"No, I didn't. But if he was like that with no clothes, perhaps the cops caught him."
"I thought Cupid wouldn't be there," Anthony said, laughing. "Goodbye, Kelly."
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Brian Lynn.